You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over now.
Good afternoon, Richmond. You are listening to The Defenders Live, and I am your host, Anna Edwards. Today is Monday, March 28th, 2011, and The Defenders Live is brought to you as a production of The Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And I am delighted to bring you a special program today. We are going to do a one-hour show and give you the opportunity to call us and ask your questions. The Defenders is brought to you as a production of the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality, and you can learn more about the organization and its work at defendersfje.org or at defendersfje.blogspot.com. Today's show is the culmination of several interviews that we have done, if you've been tuning in over the last year, with members of the African Community Network. And over the course of several of those interviews, we've talked to women and men from different countries, but we found that we were talking mostly to men, and we found that many issues that came up that deal with women's experiences as immigrants to the United States from Africa, we needed to spend more time and delve into some of those issues a little bit more. We don't always realize when the conversations that we're having are male-centric, and so it's very helpful to begin to look deeper into these subjects and specifically to get the perspective of women. And it's, you know, it's really interesting how sometimes even in this day and age when everyone hopes that everything is equal and balanced and, you know, well-rounded, that that we don't need to emphasize things in a particular direction. But the truth is we do, because what happens is when we start thinking that everything is equal and everything is experienced in the same way, we start not listening to specific kinds of experiences and not recognizing when something particular is going on that pertains to one group or another. And of course, the only way we can overcome injustice and overcome inequality is by paying attention to it. So, that having been said, this show is going to be focused on introducing you to a group of women that is going to delve into some of the issues. And then the second half of the show will be, we will open up the line so that you can give us a call. And the number that you are going to call is 649-9737. 804-649-9737. And so I look forward to hearing your questions or comments. I'm going to state right up front that your questions or comments must be brief. So start practicing right now, writing really short questions and or really brief commentary that just gets right to the point. That's the main thing. Because when we're on the air, it's very important to give our guests the opportunity to answer and to keep things in a good flow. So I want to say how grateful I am to all my listeners to The Defenders Live. And I want to be able to welcome each of our guests to the show and introduce them to you. All right. Okay, so today we have with us a return guest, Rose Ndani. She's representing the African Community Network and the Movement to Save the Ogoni People. Rose, welcome.
Oh, thank you very much. It's a delight to be here and very happy to meet you all.
Good, good. All right. And we have, you've brought with you, I'm going to go ahead and introduce you since you're here and you've got a microphone. Okay. We have a friend of Rose who's a student of Bible study. You all are in a Bible study group together?
Yes.
Yeah. Tanel Hilliard. Welcome, Tanel.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Good. And our next guest is Elsie Okpu, and she is from the Cameroon, and she is representing the African Immigrants for Peace and Reconciliation. Welcome, Elsie.
Good morning, Richmond. Thank you for having me. I'm very humbled to be here today.
Great, great. And to our fourth guest is Modupe Ilie.
Ije.
Thank you. Modupe Ije, and she's from Nigeria, and welcome to
thank
the show.
You. I'm delighted to be here.
Good, good, good. We have had sort of a preliminary conversation in order to determine what we were going to talk about, and I think that the consensus was to just sort of go ahead and talk about what the experience of African women is at home and then as they encounter it when they come to the U.S. And one of the topics that seems to be at the heart of this is African family structures, African family values, and what that has meant for contemporary women as well as traditionally oriented women, and then again how that translates to moving from the U.S. to the United States. So I'd like to give each of you, your voice now to be able to, you know, make an introductory statement about, how we're going to be approaching what we're talking about today. I would like to start with Modupe.
I'm here today to talk about the role of the African woman in the house. You know, when I was growing up, mothers used to be, you know, full-time housewives or part-time. If they had to be out of the house, mm-hmm. it had to be a few hours working and not, you know, full-time like I find women do nowadays and not really having time to take care of the home. You know, the mothers used to be there, help us with our homework and all that, but nowadays I found that coming over here especially, I find that women work very hard. They work different shifts. They're not there for the family. And you find out that at the end of the day, the kids are out there with no supervision. You know, they end up, you know, doing things parents don't know about. Mm-hmm. And most times, by the time the parents find out, it's too late to curb, you know, whatever activities the kids have found themselves in. Mm-hmm. And we find that most of these kids end up in jail. Mm-hmm. You know, they end up being, you know, no gooders, and it's very appalling.
It's a real challenge.
Yeah.
Elsie, how did you want to sort of move into a similar conversation, I think?
Well, coming from Africa, we have a patriarch where the father is the head of the family, and the mother stays at home as the homemaker. Mm-hmm. The father goes out there and brings in bread or brings in food for the family. But within the years, in the 21st century, of course, there has been a change as we moved from Africa to the United States. We've noticed a change in role. There has been a role reversal. We've noticed that the women are very hardworking now, a little bit more than the men. Although physically it's challenging, but we've noticed that the women leave their houses more than the men to go out there to get bread equally as the men do. So as she had rightfully said, there is that imbalance in supervision because the women are trying to adjust to the challenges of the 21st century. So while they see their friends in the West trying to move further, professional-wise, mm-hmm. education-wise, they too are trying to step up. So the lives that our mothers lived, we have not been able to live the same life because of the challenges of today's world. So there is a very, very obvious change in the way our mothers live and the way we live, because mm-hmm. transiting from Africa into the United States has played a major role in our roles as women inside the family.
Right.
So it has tipped the scale of balance when it comes to the role of the African woman in the family. The African woman is not only the mother when she has to be, or the wife when she has to be, she is also a breadwinner.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Are you finding that there are more single mothers as you come over? Are there more are African immigrant women becoming single mothers in the United States more, or is that also happening in Africa?
That is not happening in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I was in Africa last year of August. I noticed that the family structure remains because tradition dictates that a girl stays in marriage. That is the tradition that our forefathers passed on to us, mm-hmm. that our mothers passed on to us. So, but when we come here, due to the exposure of the West, due to the tools and equipment we have in our disposal to understand better what marriage has to be, mm-hmm. it creates that environment of the number of divorces that occur amongst Africans.
Mm-hmm.
The African mothers and wives here in the U.S. want to have a say. Normally, before now, it was the man who was the decision maker.
Mm-hmm.
So there is that conflict of interest. The women want to be wives, mother, and also decision maker.
Right, head of the household.
Head of the household.
Sure.
So there is that clash of imbalance of power. So when that happens, in order for the woman to be comfortable in herself, she has the choice to either move out of the house and be comfortable being a single woman, or stay there and go through the trauma of her newfound voice
mm-hmm.
in the marriage. So there is still that notion of a woman is supposed to be married in Africa.
Gotcha.
But while we moved here, it's a lot more different. We find many African women
becoming single mothers.
Yes.
Yeah. Rose, you had mentioned before looking at also the family African structure, family structures here. What so far are you thinking in terms of?
In terms of the family structure, I will elaborate more in details about it. Actually, it's more of a traditional family support system involving two married individuals,
mm-hmm.
you know, about providing care and stabilities, you know, for the kids and offspring to come. Before I go there, let me go back in the days. It used to be more of polygamies in which mm-hmm. men married multiple wives, you know, to establish the sense of being the head of the family and take care of them, and in which the wife feel more protected, secure, and are guided by the man. But nowadays, it's more of a nuclear family in terms of a man marry one wife, in which we also have extended families that include aunts, grandparents, cousins, nephews, and stuff like that. But in terms of the nuclear family, it's considered the traditionally family again,
mm-hmm.
in which the nuclear family consists of a mother and children. So that is more of what is going on nowadays compared to the polygamy.
Right, right.
Back then.
Is the fact that women are becoming more assertive? Obviously, incredibly brief experience. Last year I was 8 days. That was my first introduction to Africa at all, and it was in Mali.
Mm-hmm.
And then this year I spent 5 weeks in Mali. So, and I lived with a family. So I began to get a sense of what a slightly more modern traditional family was like. But the man is still very much the head of household. But as you say, the mother was at home. And so she was there to supervise all the activities of the children. She knew where they went and when they were coming home. And the children are very much a part of everything that went on in the household, which I think is also different than it is here. I don't see, we have so many conversations about, you know, how to give children responsibility in the household, and yet, and when I was there, there's no conversation about it. Children are just a part of the responsibilities of the household. Everyone has what they're supposed to do, and everyone fills in. And so there's for me, seemed to be a stronger sense of that. But in all situations, you know, there are always going to be challenges to those systems. And as people are economically not finding jobs, and finding that it's harder to maintain even the nuclear family, as you described it. So it's becoming more single mothers, or mothers are the head of the household, and maybe men are not feeling as empowered as they used to.
Right. And when I first, let me give my own perspective, Rose. Basically, when I first arrived in the States, and for going from my ass household example, like my dad, when he came, you know, he used to be a police officer, but when he came to America, it's very hard to find a good job, especially where he used to do. Mm-hmm. And then my mom, becoming a nurse, you know, she has to work more and try to help out the household. So he kind of feel, you know, kind of down, but sometimes I'm like, don't give up. It's okay. You'll find a good job and try to be the head of the family back, like, in Africa. Mm-hmm. So we find it different based on, like, when we arrive to as part of the cultural shock in which we're not as similar to American tradition.
Right.
But, you know, it's step by step.
Are you finding maybe in some ways that there, because of the dynamics of coming here, and as Elsie pointed out earlier too, the changing dynamics within Africa, that there really is this push for equality, women having to have a more equal say, because things are changing, you know, sort of across the board, and achieving that equality of power, that equality of voice, will somehow then, if, you know, there's always a challenge, I think, of men adjusting, like you said, adjusting to this change. They're supposed to be the head of the family. They're supposed to be the breadwinner. They're supposed to make all the decisions. And their whole sense of identity is built on that. So then if that is breaking down and you have a whole generation of men who have no self-confidence because they no longer know what they're supposed to be doing, how then do they learn to work with women to create a new kind of balance where they also don't feel threatened by the achievements of women, but feel like that also strengthens them as well?
Mm-hmm. I'll rightfully say things like that take baby steps. And African men are very, very resilient. Mm-hmm. They might act up today that, okay, we embrace you to be, they might embrace the woman to be the head of the family in a day.
Uh-huh.
And I bet you they'll come back to the role.
Uh-huh.
They'll make you feel, though you earn more than they do.
Interesting.
They'll redirect you even to the Bible.
Uh-huh.
There is a way to play that out, that uh-huh. God said the man has to be the head.
Uh-huh.
So there is no way an African man's ego can allow him to successfully to be comfortable. Because while growing, there is always a gender role disparity. If you see the way, like, for example, the way my brothers are treated in the family setting is different from the way I'm treated.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I'm always asked to be with mom mm-hmm. and learn what women are supposed to learn. So I saw my brothers growing up strong in terms of their ego. So it's very hard. It's a rigid reality.
Yeah.
It's going to take baby steps, as I emphasize.
Yeah.
Though everything is dynamic, it will take baby steps for the African man who has been culturally formed to leave that position of comfort and accept the woman to be the head of the household.
And, of course, mothers play a part in that.
Sure, right? Mothers do play a part in that. Yeah. But since our mothers are of a different generation, they still resound the fact that the man has to be the head because that is what they know. That is all what their parents passed on to them. Mm-hmm. Because if an African an African girl or a woman tries to talk above that level, she will be looked as being
too assertive. Too,
yes. Yeah. So we've come to a point where, okay, I earn more than my husband, but okay, let him just be the head. Though it's threatening to the men, but they are still the head of the African house.
So, right, yeah. right. I think we are at a moment at which I need to make a little break and let our listeners know that they are listening to The Defenders Live here on WRIR. It's 97.3, Richmond's low-power FM radio station. It is Richmond's independent radio station, Richmond's radio for the rest of us. We are delighted to have you tuning in. Defenders Live is brought to you by the Defenders for Freedom, Justice, and Equality. And to learn more, please visit defendersfje.org or defendersfje.blogspot.com. Today's show is called Dreams of Migration and the Baggage That Binds Us. And I'm talking to a group of women who have emigrated to the United States from different countries in Africa. Rose Ndani, who is representing the African Community Network and the Movement to Save the Ogoni People, is from Nigeria. Elsie Okpu is representing the African Immigrants for Peace and Reconciliation. She's from Cameroon. And Modupe Ije is also from Nigeria. And I forgot to ask you now, are you representing an organization here as well, or?
No. I was invited by a friend who is a friend of yours.
Yeah, right, yes, Osita.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. Well, welcome again to
Thank
the
you.
Show. Welcome, ladies, to the show. Welcome, Tanel, also
Thank you.
To the show. And I'm going to be interested to have Tanel sort of weigh in a little bit, because you are not an immigrant. You are a local African-American young woman who is, like we said, you're in a Bible study group with Rose.
Mm-hmm.
And so you, I imagine, are learning a little bit about African women. And and maybe not. Maybe today's the first time this has been a focus of the conversation. But I'm going to, look forward to, if you have some thoughts as the show goes on, what you might be thinking about some of what you're hearing. And Modupe, talk a little bit more about, I think I'd like to have each of you, just as Rose did, talk a little bit about your specific experience of coming here and what that's then led you to think. So talk a little bit about how you came to be in Richmond.
Well, I actually came to join my husband, who came here in the 80s to school. And after graduation from college, he decided to stay in Richmond, and he's been here ever since.
Mm.
Yeah, we met when he came home on vacation once, and he brought me here. And coming here, I would say, it hasn't really been different for me except for the culture. The culture is entirely different. You know, back home, like she has been saying, the man is recognized as the head of the household. And no matter how much the woman makes, she still has to step down and allow the man to be the head of the household. And she's there to support him,
mm-hmm.
you know, to be his backbone.
Mm-hmm.
To, like a pastor in my church said, he said, he is the head, the woman is the neck. And the woman tells the head to roll, the neck tells the head to roll wherever it has to go. And that's the
way
it's
supposed
to be. So
women can still rule.
Exactly.
They just can't look like
but
that.
But not just be assertive. Because if you're there being the backbone, of the man, he will not make a mistake. And he will, they say, for a man to be successful, he has to have a woman.
Mm-hmm.
And,
That's an interesting, sort of a different kind of interdependence.
Exactly.
That's more publicly acknowledged, in a way. Not entirely, but, in a way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And, coming here, I find that men over here, like she said, when most of them come here, they can't really find the kind of jobs, to put them in that role mm-hmm. of the head of the household. And they find it difficult to accept the fact that the woman is making more money than them. It's just ego, they find it so hard. And in most cases, and that makes them become defensive. No matter how much the woman tries to step down to give them, make them act as the head of the household, they still find it challenging. Mm-hmm. You know, anything she says becomes an accusation. Or just because you're making more money than me, you know. And it's not just with Africans. I have a few friends at work from India, Philippines, and they all have the same, from Lebanon, they all have the same complaint. Right. The men, they are really having problems with their husbands accepting the fact that, you know, the woman is there to support them, not to be above them.
Right. Now, that makes me think of something that Elsie said earlier, too, is that Africa is like in the 60s in terms of this kind of sort of social development around women's roles and gender roles. And also from what you're saying, and also I know that we've heard this before, that this is also happening in from other women from other countries as well.
Exactly.
So, you know, the United States is a particular place, and maybe some of the Western European countries also, you know, sort of have this, you know, they went through this particular thing in the 60s, in the 70s, but in the United, but for you coming to this, it's a new learning experience, and I think it's, I think it is a challenge, and but also maybe you get some of the benefit of women having had to go through this and men having had to go through this before. And so you're sort of, you get to see the whole spectrum of being in the middle of that development, but also seeing maybe what it could be. Are you seeing examples of where there has been an evolution and it's working? No? As a pointed question.
Just to add more to it, men having this ideology that they're the head is part of the culture. You know, like she said, it's all over the globe. It's not just African men.
Mm-hmm.
But women being at home, taking care of the kids, cooking, doing housework, maybe if they get out and be more educated and try to work together so that they become equal, you know, that will help out too. Not just for them just staying at home and doing the housework,
right,
but come out more and support the men more.
Right.
Maybe
as the generations begin to do that,
right,
more, then
yeah,
men will grow up with that dynamic and be a little bit more comfortable,
right,
with that.
Right, that they're,
yeah,
equal partners.
Yeah, yeah.
Not just they're the head and women,
right,
are below them.
Right.
You know?
I'm going to throw in too, because I don't want to make it sound like American men have got it all together. Because it's not quite true. I mean, I've had people say to me that I appear even to still be struggling with male oppression. and so that, you know, it's still very much, I think that's, gender roles are still something that is very much in play. As we're all growing, and my music is playing, which is to tell me that to once again remind everyone that you are listening to The Defenders Live, and that we're at the halfway mark in the show, and I need to make a couple of announcements, and then we'll come back with the second half of the show, where you, the listener, will be able to call in and give us your questions. The number to call in is 804-649-9737, 804-649-9737. And for a couple of things that are coming up, the first thing I want to mention is this coming Sunday, April 3rd, the City Slave Trail Commission will be unveiling 17 historic markers along the trail of enslaved Africans. And this is a long-time project that they have been working on, and it's been quite an interesting struggle in reference to the burial ground, which is, of course, something that you've heard about many, many, many times as you listen to this show. The Richmond's African Burial Ground will be one of the sites for a marker to be unveiled. And I think that this particular event is one of the public opportunities for the community to engage its voice in how we as African descendants tell our stories here in the United States, given the legacy of slavery and given the legacy of Reconstruction and the legacy of Jim Crow and the legacy of the Civil Rights Movement and the legacy of our continued struggles for self-determination and self-assertion. So I hope that you can join the community at 3 p.m. on Sunday, April 3rd. It will be, the main program will take place at Lumpkins Jail, but we, the Sacred Ground Project has been invited to do the unveiling on the site of the burial ground. So we will be there, which is on, it's essentially still on the asphalt, which is still on the parking, on the graves. And your presence there will also reassert the idea that the asphalt must come off as soon as possible. The permission essentially has been given, as supported and pushed by the community, and the property will be transferred to the city July 1st, but there is no reason why the asphalt can't come off sooner. So again, take this opportunity to come to this unveiling, learn more of the history of Africans in the United States over the course of the history of Richmond, and be there to support the respect that this burial ground site is due. And I also will assert that I would like you to take advantage of recognizing that cemetery as representative of all the burial grounds that we have in Richmond that need to have the respect paid to them that they are due. It's our ancestors and it's our children. So please try to learn more about that and be a part of it. April 9th, the following week, is a national demonstration in New York City. There's also one in San Francisco on April 10th, but I'm not asking you to look at that unless you're traveling to the West Coast. But it's an anti-war demonstration. It's the first national anti-war demonstration of the year. It takes place in New York. It is being coordinated by the United National Anti-War Coalition. The web address for more information is unacpeace.org, UNAC.org. And I will come back at another break and tell you about some other things that are happening. Right now, I'd like to come back to the show. In mentioning the anti-war demonstration that's coming up, another one of the focus areas that has come up in our conversation before the show got started had to do with the impact of wars on women and women's experiences. I'd like to have us sort of go into that, because one of the things, of course, that tends to be in the news, I think most people's introductions to Africa or in the different countries in Africa has tended to be focused on war. And sort of the chaos of upheaval that goes along with that, but also disease, with starvation, all of these kinds of things. And I've had some opportunity to talk a little bit about underdevelopment and what that has meant for Africa, and what it has meant even for the African community in the United States, again, throughout the history of the United States. But I think this is a really good opportunity for these women to be able to bring their perspectives on what that means. Rose has worked with an organization called the Movement to Save the Ogoni People, which is, in essence, if you look at what's happening, that's evolving into and has evolved into a kind of a warlike experience when you're talking about oil and what the exploitation of a natural resource and the fact that a people is not benefiting from it, and in their attempts to resist the oppression as a result of that, and as in their attempts to be able to take advantage of what that should be bringing to their communities, not to mention the impact on the environment, that there's a history of violent interaction. There's a history of a kind of disruption in the communities, and what that has meant. So I'm going to let you I'll let you start, and then we'll move to each person so that we can, have this conversation.
Sure. First of all, MOSUP stand for Movement for the Survival of the Ogoni People. Like she was just briefing that they went through a lot of stuff, like a lot of turmoil, wars, rape, and they're shelterless. It's been real tough. So some of them flee to this country, especially women's with their kids. When they come, they're going through a tough time. So that's why I'm raising this issue, bringing it up,
Are you finding that that people from this region are becoming refugees? Are they leaving the area, or are they staying?
Actually, most of them are leaving the area because there's no good, based on the war, how it started, there's no good water to drink. I mean, their land, because Ogoniland actually is based on oil, it's where petroleum comes from. But when the government refused to take care of the land, or the oil messes the land, so it killed the crops, mm-hmm. and then killed the fishes in the water. Mm-hmm. So they are going through a tough time.
The land essentially can't support the people.
Right.
And
so they immigrate to a different country, try to find a way to survive.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. What are the countries that are closest to the region where the Ogoni live, so that people are migrating to?
Right. It's called Republic of Benin.
Mm-hmm.
And Cotonou, so it accepts a lot of refugees, mm-hmm. and they stay there for a little bit. And when the United Nations comes to help them, provide food for them, and then resettle some of them, you know, to America or to Canada, mm. through Geneva, assisting them as well.
And people are finding that they need to migrate as far as the United States and to Canada, or is that because these are the organizations that are on the ground helping? I'm just wondering, could people not just resettle in other parts of Africa as opposed
to... It's just that who is willing to accept them? Mm. Because since the government is not helping them, you know, so they try to migrate to any part where they can be safe. But most of them, since the United States offered to assist them, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of them try to migrate here with the help of the United States government, mm-hmm. and resettle some of them here.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. So in reference to, I'd say, how is that affecting the family? The fact, again, that the land can't sustain and people are having to move, and in that refugee situation, are families able to leave together? Are men leaving earlier in order to find work or to resettle ahead of the families?
Sometimes men, for some reason, in order to save their life or protect their family, based on the threats some of them receive from the mm-hmm. government, you know, mm-hmm. spreading the news about how they need help with their land is destroying their crops. So when they are afraid of their life, some of them just run away from home, and their wife and kids don't know where mm. their dad or her husband went to. So the lady will start looking for help with the children, and when they hear about who is trying to resettle them and help them, some of them just flee to a different neighborhood close by, country that will assist them. And the household sometimes is separated forever because they don't know where their dad run to, mm-hmm. and the children don't have a dad.
Right.
And sometimes the man trying to flee from his life die while fleeing, you know.
So, and they don't get to know that, and they, yeah.
Yes, so it's really sad situation.
Yeah. Elsie, this was something you wanted to talk about specifically as well, so tell me something. It's very moving, you know, to begin to go into these stories, because, you know, there's the one sort of, not necessarily a natural evolution, but what we've been talking about have been, you know, how is the family changing? How are male roles changing? And that kind of thing. But when war becomes the catalyst, that's an entirely different dynamic.
Yes, thank you very much for giving me another chance. When war becomes the catalyst, there is mass exodus. People have to move. It does not become your choice. It becomes the choice of survival. And by nature, man depends on safety and security as one of those basic necessities. So in Africa, like Rose had mentioned earlier, concerning the Ogonu people who live in the Delta region, that is where Nigeria's oil production comes from, Nigeria being one of the leading production of oil in the world. So those people are deprived of their livelihood, that is money coming out of the oil production due to political reasons.
Mm-hmm.
So right. when they try to go against government policies in order to get a better life, they find themselves being hunted down, and it has erupted into a crisis in the form of war. So mm-hmm. most of the men leave the family first, and with the low impact of technology, or since many people can afford technology, in the villages it is hard to locate where your loved one moved to.
Right, the communication is
just yeah. too limited.
Mm-hmm.
So countries like Benin, as Rose mentioned, Benin, Cameroon, Ghana, which are in the west coast of Africa, receive incoming people.
Refugees. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And luckily, we have the United Nations High Commission for Refugees and the United States, which is open to Africa to accept incoming refugees from Africa. We also have the case of Rwanda and Burundi,
mm-hmm.
the Hutus and the Tutsi.
Mm-hmm.
We saw mass killings. Though the world watched past that, it is still in our hearts. We, the Africans, we still remember. So that caused mass movements, and the family structure has been broken around that part of Africa
mm-hmm.
because families are still grieving. They are still traumatized. The individual in the family is traumatized. The individual in the community is traumatized. The whole nation is traumatized. So, unfortunately for Africa, we don't have psychologists or psychiatrists where if you find yourself in a traumatic situation, you can seek help.
Mm.
We were not raised that way. When you're traumatized,
yeah.
you have to just shove it down your throat and go through your trauma.
Right.
So we Africans have not been able to identify trauma as a problem in itself. It is only when the West started telling the young girls who were rape victims
mm-hmm.
during the Sudanese war, during the war in Sierra Leone, it is when the West started telling them, you were raped, this is a problem. That is when they noticed that this was not our livelihood. This is rape is a problem.
Right.
Because it had become a lifestyle in Sierra Leone.
Mm-hmm.
We have young women, young girls who were taken into the forest, raped by militias, and they have rape babies. So imagine you living with a rape baby. You are traumatized. You won't even know what to do with the baby.
Right.
So that idea of the family becomes shattered in your mind because you don't even know who raped you.
Yeah.
These women are gang raped.
Yeah.
So
mm-hmm.
there are many rape incidences which happen during war.
Mm-hmm.
So the family structure becomes shaken at that point. We also have Egypt, which goes through a lot of rape incidences.
Mm.
And due to tradition, the women have to cover it. Of recent, on Saturday, there was this woman who ran into the hotel of
right.
journalists crying that she was raped. But immediately, other women who were staff in that hotel were insulting her that she was a traitor.
Right.
In fact, rape, if you complain about rape in Egypt, you are a prostitute. You have been...
It's like you're automatically transformed
you have been
into
we have that problem. So it affects the whole idea of a family in Africa. So these wars cause the family to split in a way that we as Africans cannot control it. We can't control this force
mm-hmm.
of war. When it comes, the first thing every human being wants to do is to fly. Fright and fly.
Right,
that's the first thing you have to do. So the men leave, the women stay with the children because the first instinct of a woman is to protect and nurture the children.
Mm-hmm.
So it will be difficult for an African woman to leave the children and flee.
Sure.
She makes sure if she's fleeing, she carries along the children.
Mm-hmm.
They will only die in front of her eyes, but she will be running with them.
Right.
She'll be carrying some household belongings on her head, carrying one of the child on the back, holding the others with her hands. So we have that picture. That picture has stayed in our minds. Yeah. For us as Africans who have migrated here, we see these horrible pictures. We know these horrible pictures. We live with these horrible pictures, but mm-hmm. yet we still have to be comforted with our lives in the West, which right. is very difficult.
Right.
And move on.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's what I'd like to talk about in the last quarter of this of the program is how you're moving on, mm-hmm. and one of the pieces, of course, for women is the entrepreneurial piece, how they're starting your own businesses and making your way in the West. Again, you are listening to The Defenders live here on WRIR 97.3 Low Power FM Radio. It's Richmond's radio for the rest of us. And the rest of us today include a much broader community than we tend to think about. The population of immigrant peoples into Richmond specifically is growing constantly. It is a gorgeous thing to watch happen. And there's a lot of learning that's going on from both sides, people who have been here and people who are new. We've been talking with a group of women about some of the experiences of African women immigrants. The countries that are represented here today are Cameroon and Nigeria, and but it's a West African experience. There's a lot of sharing that goes along. One of the things that had come up before is that women that there's a lot of migration, a lot of movement in Africa anyway. And of course, the history of humankind has been one of migration and movement. And when you move, it, you know, how do you start your new life? How do you thrive? What are the new livelihoods? And how do you overcome? You're either carrying with you what the experiences that you have been through, and then discovering what it takes to make it in the next place. So. I'll start with Mudube and talk a little bit about, because your path here was not refugee, you know, or any experience like that. It was education and livelihood,
exactly,
opportunity.
Yes, well,
and marriage,
exactly.
That man brought you here.
I lived in the city, mm-hmm. so I did not experience any of that. You know, but I know I heard, and I know I have friends who whose families, you know, were involved in, you know, most of the wars, especially with her mm-hmm. saying she's from Ogoni. Mm-hmm. I lived in Lagos all my life.
Okay. So, yeah, big city girl. Exactly.
Okay. So I don't really know much about, except what I see on TV.
Yeah.
And like I said, through friends.
Yeah.
And then coming over here, I know I've watched on TV several times. And that's about all the experience I really know.
Yeah, so, which is common here. I
exactly.
mean, the people who grew up in the big cities here don't have a very different sense of what the American experience
exactly.
is.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Exactly. And I just don't know what to say.
So what are you doing? Tell us about what you are doing. And you know, again, big city girl from Africa,
yeah, well,
you know, from like, Lagos. Lagos is a huge city.
Exactly. Yeah. I went to college in Calabar. That's University of Cross River State.
Mm-hmm.
That was where I schooled. I have a bachelor's degree in economics from there.
Okay.
And, you know.
How's it translating in the U.S.?
Well, coming over here, I'll say it's been okay for me. I've not really had, you know, that. I've not been able to differentiate. I'd say, like, you know, they can talk about the wars and tell the difference of how, you know,
yeah.
it's been over there and the difference here. For
yeah.
me, it's been much of just a culture shock, as in, you know, I come over here, I see people don't, I wouldn't say act the same way, but, you know, it's like the way people accept you is quite different from the way, you know, people
mm-hmm.
accept foreigners back home.
Uh-huh.
Because
yes.
over there, people are more hospitable.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you come from another country, people treat you like, you know, family.
Yeah.
But over here, I find that it's not the same.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
much
been
more suspicious.
Exactly. And that's
yeah.
been a kind of shock for me, you
yeah.
know, and it took me a while to really understand. I have a few American friends, but most times I tell them, you know what, I try so hard to understand you, but I can't. Because one day they're this way, the next time they just act in ways I'm like, you know, so different from, you know, what I expect them to act.
Yeah.
And, you know, with the wars, it's been so, you know, from what I've heard about the wars and seen on TV, the documentaries and all that, it's really, you know, a shame that human beings have to go through, you know, what people were put through.
Yeah.
You know, nobody should go through that. You know, it's unfair. You know, it's inhuman for, you know, you to look at a fellow human being, especially with the cases of the rapes. You know, how can you look at a fellow human being and do that to them? And most of these men have sisters. You know, they don't think of the fact that, you know, how would I feel if somebody did that to my sister?
The humanization of someone else is necessary in order to commit acts like that.
Exactly. So, yeah. And then with the men, you know, the men go through, you know, they leave their families. I'm sure it's painful for most of them. Mm-hmm. You know, the kids end up being fatherless. Mm-hmm. The mothers have to, you know, accept the role or take up the role responsibility of being the head of the household and the mother taking care of the kids.
Yeah, right.
And that's very hard, very hard rule for the women, especially some women are housewives or maybe their husbands
and
provide
have never worked before.
Exactly. Their husbands provide for everything, you know, for their livelihood, and then they find out that they're the ones who now have to provide the livelihood for their kids.
Right.
And like she said, women don't flee. You know, I tell people that all the time. In Africa, once a woman starts having children, it's no longer about them.
Mm-hmm.
It's now about the children, and she will do everything in her power to take care of those children.
Right, right, right. No. I've just been given the signal. We've got only 5 minutes left, and so that's really hard because, as usual, we're just getting into it, and there's more to talk about. I wanted to give Tanel a chance to. I don't know if you have anything that you would like to add in terms of even your experiences. Fairly quickly, being a young African American woman and some of the issues that women are dealing with coming from Africa. What have you heard anything that makes you think anything particular about your experience growing up and being a woman here?
Well, I moved from North Carolina, and
so you migrated from North Carolina to Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And I got tired of being down there. It was kind of like boring. And I said, well, it's time for me to move on because I'm getting older. So I said, well, my grandparents, I was like, well, it's time for me to move out on my own and move to Richmond and meet new people.
So you got the voluntary migration, right? You have the economic migration. Right. We have the voluntary migration. And since we really are coming down to it now, I'd like to give both Rose and Elsie an opportunity to sort of make closing remarks. So Rose, you go first.
I'll be making a broad overview about the migrating dreams. Well, for the general public, like the immigrant coming to the United States, most of them have a dream of having a good job, own a home, have kids, and live a peaceful neighborhood in which you can raise your children and give them every opportunity possible to make something of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And also, when they are migrating to the U.S., they look for and dream about when they think of the U.S., like they dream about, oh, it's going to be luxurious, you know,
easy,
joyful, easy, no more working too much hard. But that simple dream of a better life has given millions of people the strength to endure extreme hardship in order to attain that dream life. It is nice if you want to own a home, raise kids, and have a nice job.
Right.
But nowadays, based on the economic recession going on, I mean,
it's
in terms
difficult.
Of business, looking at immigrant-owned business, a key part of the U.S. economy are being threatened, you know, as I said, about this economic depression.
Yeah.
About 1.5 million immigrants own U.S. businesses, according to a study based on statistics for the Small Business Administration by Rob Fali, an economic professor at the University of California. You know, he found out that immigrants are 30% more likely to start a business than non-immigrants. So they account for 11.6% of all U.S. business income.
Okay.
And then many immigrants started with nothing.
Yeah.
But right now they are making their way up, which is a good thing.
We're going to have to continue the show another time because obviously we need to go straight into talking about that, about the economic development piece for immigrants. So I apologize for having to cut you off. Elsie, I apologize for not being able to give you that last minute. But I really want to thank all of you for coming today and know that we will do this again because I think, the issues are very strong and there's a lot to know. And I'd actually like to invite each of you to come back individually so that we can talk specifically about some of these issues because this has been very good for our first one-hour show. All right. So, again, everybody say bye.
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 And I want to thank everyone for tuning in to today's one-hour episode of The Defenders Live. We will be back with you next week. And check out the WRIR website and defendersfje.blogspot.com for information about some of our upcoming events, including this coming Sunday. Keep up the struggle. Kindness does matter. And thank you.
Okay. You're talking so sweet, well, you needn't. You say you won't cheat, well, you needn't. You're tapping your feet, well, you needn't. It's over now, it's over.